This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. Lovely to have you with us. We're having a holiday in a little while, so we've got three programs to go. We'll be taking a few weeks off because Gordon's going away on the high seas again or something like that.
Down a river, dear, not on the high seas.
Down a river, right. And I'm flying away to Europe as well, so I'll wave to you.
And Phil's going to be driving backwards and forwards to Blackburn.
Is he?
No, I'm taking the train.
You're taking the train to Blackburn.
Yes. I'll just imagine I'm cruising.
Okay.
So it is lovely to have you with us on Been There, Done That, Joy's History Program. On today's show, we'll be talking about a forthcoming LGBTIQ social event on the 7th of October, the Coming Back Out Ball. We'll remind ourselves of the bad old days in 1994 when Melbourne's gay community confronted the police who'd raided the Tasty nightclub. We'll review the long and slow march of constitutional recognition of the nation's first peoples, and we'll talk about the Snowy Mountains hydroelectric scheme, amongst other topics. First off, though, I'd like to say thank you to Gordon for representing the gay community so nicely on ABC Radio a couple of mornings ago at 7:30 while I was having me Wheaties.
Was it really? I'm glad it didn't put you off your Wheaties.
No. Now, what was this all about, please?
Well, they rang me from the studio and asked me if I could talk about the Coming Back Out Ball, which is going to be on in 7th of October at 6 o'clock at the Melbourne Town Hall. And they wanted to know a little bit more information. So the publicist rang me and said, could they call me? And I said, yes, they could, because I was already up and out of bed. And so they rang and we had a little bit of chat with Rochelle Hunt and Brian Nankervis on the ABC Radio.
Mm. And they made the comment, or someone made the comment, that you speak very well on radio. Oh, must be all the practice you've had on Joy.
A Joy, yes, that's true too. And they did happen to mention that I was a presenter on Joy. On Been There, Done That.
Yeah.
And Rochelle had a bit of a giggle about that one. She thought it was a pretty good title. Yeah,
we do too. So what is this particular Elders Dance that you'd be talking about happening?
There is an Elders Dance club that I go to as well. That's held at the Fitzroy Town Hall on the first Thursday month. But this next month, it's going to be on a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Fitzroy Town Hall. So if you want to have a bit of a fun and a bit of a giggle, it's good. And we've been doing a few dance steps and learning to do bits and pieces and getting ready for the Coming Back Out Ball.
So that's the Coming Out Ball on the 7th of October at the Melbourne Town Hall.
Now, we're coming back out, not just the coming out.
It's the coming back out.
We're coming back out. We certainly are.
Now, is it a dress-up?
Oh. Yes, it's formal or fabulous.
Formal or fabulous. Love that bit. What dance steps would we need to know?
Oh, look, you can just jiggle along to the music if you want to, you know. We've been learning the Chicago Swing, I think it was, the other night. We're doing that, and then we've done the evening three-step. But there's lots of disco music and everything, and there's going to be some great artists who will be there. There's a whole lineup of very talented people that are going to be doing the entertainment between the dancing. Robin Archer is the hostess for the evening, and Carlotta will be there.
Now, Carlotta, the drag queen.
Carlotta, the transgendered lady, yes.
Wow, she's been around for
a while.
Quite a while, mm-hmm. Since last century.
Yep, but...
Deborah Cheatham?
Deborah Cheatham. I'm looking forward to Deborah because she's got such a great voice.
Jerry Connolly.
Probably. I don't know what he's going to come as, with perhaps the Queen Mum or something, rather. I'm not quite
sure.
Yeah. But it's anyhow... And
there'll be a live little orchestra.
And a live orchestra to dance to, yes. So there you go. It's going to be a fun night. And already on Facebook, a lot of people are already signing up for it.
Mm. Now, why on earth would there be a need, or is it a celebration of LGBT elders coming out?
Well, it's part of the actual Seniors Week. there is the big seniors week that's going on, but Tristan and all the Queen's men have decided that we should have a ball, a gay ball for the older gay community. You don't have to be old to come to it. You can come to it as long as you'll have to pay if you do come. But if you're an LGBTIQ person over 65, you get in for free. Yes. So if you're over 65, you're free.
And you can be a wallflower if you want
to. You can be a wallflower if you want to, or you can get up and dance. You can have to do whatever you want to do. But other than that, there is a charge for it as well. There's a concession price and a main price. Yeah.
And you can find out information for that on comingbackoutball.com.
That's right. Yes, yes. So you can find out all about it, who's on.
And it's quite often that, in fact, as we get older, we tend to be pushed back into the closet.
Well,
and except in your case,
yes, I'm
where
not.
You found a closet that didn't have any door on it.
Didn't have a back on it either. I didn't get into Narnia, but it was no. It's a good thing because there's so much done for the youth of the gay community. But we do need something done for the older people.
Well, we tend to become more invisible as we get older.
Oh, God, yes.
So that's one thing.
Just the invisible man half the time.
Yeah.
Except when I'm on Joy.
But it's also an opportunity to realise that you're not the only gay in the village.
That's exactly right. There's certainly a few gays in the Melbourne village. I think Batman would be pleased.
Yeah. That's terrific. So that's it. Comingbackoutball.com.
Yep.
But you'll probably be hearing more about it here on Joy in the next few weeks as well, because 7th of October is about, what, how many months away?
2 months.
Two months away. So you've got time to get your ball frock ready or your penguin suit to the dry cleaners and back again, or just getting your head in that space. Now, on the 7th of August 1994, there was another evening dance event which was actually upset. This dance event was held in Melbourne
down in
Commerce Club in Flinders Street. Mm. And it was a gay nightclub called The Tasty Nightclub. Some of our listeners may not, and this is our opportunity, Gordon, to perhaps fill in a few of the blank spaces and let people realise that major events in Australia's gay history have occurred here in Melbourne. It's not always been Sydney. Anywhere else. Melbourne has played its own part. Sydney has the Mardi Gras. That was their police confrontation. The Tasty Nightclub on the 7th of August 1994 is Melbourne's time of arrival.
Well, it was something that sort of changed the atmosphere pretty well throughout the state, I would have thought.
Oh, yes.
You know, I just think it was such a shocking thing.
Well, what happened on that night was that the 463 patrons of the Tasty Nightclub were detained for 7 hours, strip searched and cavity searched, and in some cases brutalised by armed members of Victoria Police.
Mm-hmm.
Not a very proud time for them.
No, but I think from that they learnt a lot, didn't they?
They certainly did. Yeah. The Tasty Nightclub wasn't widely known to the general public prior to the media reports of the raid, and was a popular alternative venue frequented by a large number of gay and transgender patrons and well-known local identities. Though not endorsed by the organisers, drug taking was common amongst some of the patrons, and the Tasty events were in some ways a precursor to the later underground rave parties.
Mm.
So the cops came to raid the venue on the basis that there were drugs present.
The venue, though, was legal, wasn't it? It was a legal gathering.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
So do you need a strip search to find drugs?
Well, it was not necessary, but they did it, and this is where this is one of the main things about the raid wasn't it? Because of the strip searching.
Yeah, and the whole process actually founded on the basis that we were impotent, that we had no comeback to the police, that they could do almost what they wanted to.
Well, that was the attitude, wasn't it, of the police, is that we won't speak up.
But then, of course, they didn't realise that our community has some very interesting and high-profile legal people.
Well, but you've got to remember that the predominant sexuality of the event's clientele was already and well-known to the police, leading to intense speculation that the club was specifically targeted for reasons grounded in homophobia. Oh, well. And when you look at the age of the police force at that period, 94, it was what I'll call the old generation. It's our grandfather's generation, possibly, who were in the police force, and their attitudes were quite likely to be homophobic.
Can I just put it in perspective? There would have been drug taking at straight venues.
Of course, there was. Yeah.
And they weren't raided.
Not on this occasion.
No.
Well, have they been raided
on a regular basis? I think that the places down in King Street that were still operating, I think they had sort of regular sort of checkups,
But probably not strip searches.
But not strip searches, I would have thought.
So the argument for homophobia is fairly strong.
It made such headlines that it really brought the gay community into the front and centre of everything that was happening.
Exactly.
Didn't it?
Well, nowhere else had there happened at a raid. No patrons were permitted to enter or leave the venue for approximately 7 hours. That's never happened to the Straits. Full nudity was enforced and searches were performed in full view of other patrons.
Mm.
The strip search, while distressing for all attendees, were particularly humiliating for transgender patrons.
Oh, definitely for transgender
people. So, apparently the raid resulted in only two drug-related arrests.
Out of 400 and how many?
463 patrons, but all charges were later dropped.
Mm, they had to be.
So this was taken up. This raid, the cause was taken up by the Age newspaper. Look at this, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And the resulting media attention created a great deal of political controversy, as well as embarrassment to the police force and the Kennett government of the day. They copped a lot of flack as well. With all this steam being generated, a class action was run by legal types, and one of those people was Gary Singer.
That's right.
Later the Deputy Lord Mayor of the City of Melbourne, but also one of the benefactors here
at Joy.
We have number one studio is the Gary Singer studio.
That's right.
And the incident led to successful legal action against the Victoria Police, and damages of well over $10 million was awarded to patrons. This sum would have been considerably higher had all the affected parties come forward, but a large number of patrons fearing the repercussions of outing themselves in a public forum or reluctant to relive the traumatic experience didn't participate.
Well, there'd be a lot of people probably went to the place who would have still been in the closet.
Oh, yeah.
But they could go to these places where they could be with their like kind,
yeah,
so they could enjoy themselves.
That's right,
and then they get something like the police raid going on. Well, you wouldn't want your name splashed all over the paper or anything for doing that. You would have had employers that would have been very homophobic perhaps, and would have sacked you on the spot and all this sort of thing.
The Tasty raid has been described by some as Melbourne's Stonewall. Comparable to the latter through the effect on community views and awareness and the resultant reviews of inappropriate police activity.
Mm.
Well, one of the results of the police activity was, in fact, the creation of the gay and lesbian
liaison officers.
Exactly, liaison officers.
That would have been many years later, though.
It was a few years later.
A few
years later. But at least that we have the wonderful Glows now.
We do.
We have them on podcast here on Joy. You can go to podcast and listen to the Glows on podcast. They don't broadcast out live, but you can see their listen to their podcast.
You can talk to the Glows, but you can also safely walk into a police station and report a gay crime.
That's right, yep.
With no fear of recrimination.
Because the generations of old homophobic...
The crusty old coppers are gone.
They have, and we've got a far more enlightened attitude.
Now let's do the same with Parliament.
Let's hear Deddy Hines and Christine Arnoux. They're taking it to the streets. You're with Chris, Phil and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Stay tuned. There's more. Taking it to the streets.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that. I just realised, gentlemen, I didn't introduce you earlier.
Oh, look, but I think our regular listeners know who we are. We don't need an introduction. No, neither do you.
I do.
Yes.
I would like to announce that I'm here. And if you'd like to write to me and congratulate me for being here, you can send an email to beenthere@joy.org.au.
Okay.
You can talk to Chris and Gordon as well.
Yeah.
If you wish.
All right, then.
They can just address it to, hey, you, guys. Or,
yeah, guys.
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 Now, also, we do have some podcasts sitting up there. Julia is transferred her affections to other shows, and I'm now doing the podcasting for Been There, Done That, and it's a learning process for me, but it's great to learn new skills. So there's four of my postings up on the Been There, Done That.
Can you tell the difference between yours and Julia's?
Oh, yes.
Yours is more smooth?
No. The content is much the same.
Right.
But it's just the way I describe in words what we're talking about and the photographs I select and the headings.
The headings, right. Yeah, talking about headings. Talking about headings.
Yes. You're talking about headings, are you?
Mm-hmm. There was a big thing that was going on up in the Northern Territory over the last couple of days.
Garma, I think it's called.
Yeah, Garma, the Garma Festival, which is held, it's an annual event, but because of the other conference that they had at the Uluru, this one had a bit more significance for the Indigenous people, Indigenous Australians.
Well, it's a cultural event, historically.
It is.
Year it seems to have been very political.
Well, it had to be because of what happened at Uluru earlier this year, yeah.
So that was a continuation of the demands for recognition.
And
I'm going to say that this is a pretty old bloody story that's coming round and round every year. Back in 1963, would you believe, on August the 14th, the same mob that is behind Garma, the UK, actually presented to the Australian Parliament the Yirrkala Bark petitions.
And that was
seeking recognition of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in Commonwealth law. Here we are. How many years later?
54 years later.
54 years later.
And bugger all's been done.
It seems like it.
Yep. Well, it fell on deaf ears.
Well, of course,
who would have been motivated to get that ball rolling?
But it should have happened years before that. Even like the Indigenous people have been in Australia, what they reckon now, for 65,000 years, but because they didn't have a bit of paper to say they owned the land.
But the easiest way to deal with complex things like this is to procrastinate.
Procrastinate.
Just put them up. It's like equal marriage rights.
Yeah,
it's coming to a head.
Yeah,
and people are not willing to just sit down and shut up anymore.
No.
And they're eager for politicians to actually do something. So I think this is good timing all around. Let's all
get our backs up for both of those articles.
The 1963 petitions written on bark protested against the granting of mining rights on 300 square kilometres of land which had been cut out of Arnhem Land, which was in fact already identified as Aboriginal
lands. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And so, there's something magic underneath
the
ground.
Something magic underneath. Let's dig it all up. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll grab that bit of land back from you, having stolen it from you originally and then given it back. We'll steal it again. And the Prime Minister at the time, Robert Menzies, received the petition, but he, as a politician, has faded so far into the dark distance that we don't realise that this petition has been on the books and not satisfied by any political party that's been elected since.
I can never understand why the invasion people, the invaders, the white people, could not recognise that these people were intelligent, ordinary human beings that didn't write down anything because they didn't need to. They had their own storytelling. And it just beggars belief that you cannot ignore people that have been living in a country for centuries.
Well, you can, because that's the way invaders work.
Yeah, I suppose
you have no, if they don't meet your standards of education or experience, then they must be worthless. You don't investigate them and find out what they do and how they've survived for tens of thousands of years. You just come in and say, look, I looked at, look at this place.
We come from a country that's just about to invent the railway line or something.
We're superior.
We're so superior, yet they couldn't live in the country without basically pulling it apart.
And trying to turn it into England.
Yeah, that's right. Indigenous people have been living here for all that
time.
That's
right. Well, we've got examples elsewhere in the world, and I know we don't often like to say, well, the US has done better than us in this, but they have been through the same process of considering whether there was any rights for the Negro population of the US. And Lyndon Johnson, the president, said, well, you know, what is the point of the presidency if it's not about civil rights? And they have been through the process and they've got all the legislation in place there.
But it's taken a long time and they've got a lot wrong.
Yeah,
they have.
And they're still arguing about it.
But we haven't got anything wrong yet except the basic fact.
We haven't done anything.
We haven't recognised it. So it's Malcolm in the muddle again.
Yep, without the cute boys.
Golly.
From Malcolm in the Middle.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I was watching it on the television the other night, and I'm sitting there screaming, do something, you bees, and do something about it. It's time. You know, you can't not do something about it. There's people that have got, I don't know, I get so wild I could scream at times.
Yeah. Well, what are the First Nations people wanting? They're wanting a voice in the parliament.
So they should have.
A representative body enshrined by the nation's founding document. Okay, it's the constitution. It'll have to be altered by a public vote.
In New Zealand, the Maori Party have a certain number of seats in the parliament.
Yeah. I don't know that we're saying that's what we need here.
But they need better representation.
They need some representation because they're certainly not getting it at the moment.
The only time anybody is getting recognised in our system is when they convert to our system.
That's exactly
they're working
right.
within our rules, whereas we should be respecting their history and
their cultures. Yes. Yeah.
Now, what about the discovery in Adelaide the last couple of days?
That was incredible, wasn't it?
It was they were going through some old papers in the library and wondering whether they should keep them or not, and they found a book from 1834, that's 2 years before the formation of the state of South Australia.
And when he opened it up, there was this charter for the formation of the state of South Australia, and it's one of the, there's only, I think, six copies in the world of this this charter, and it was even before they had done anything back in England about forming the, because we had to do what the Parliament in England told us to do in those days.
The local Indigenous peoples were recognised and respected in this charter document.
And it was 2 years before the English did anything about it, so it's really quite amazing that this document is still actually there. And
what's in the water in South Australia that makes these people so progressive?
I'm never quite sure that. But
don't forget that they are only 60 at that stage. They are only 60 years on from the War of Independence in the US, and Australia was thinking, well, perhaps we are going to be going down that path as well and being independent of the UK or Great Britain. Therefore, we need a charter that recognises the original inhabitants, just as
the people in South Australia have always had independence because they were not bound by convicts.
They were a
private company that was started in England by
George Angus,
and he started a company, and people paid money to come out to be in Adelaide, which was they had found where this place was for a city, and so they came out here and settled in South Australia. So they've always been really independent, but up until Federation, South Australia was always the state that was ahead of everybody else because they could do.
They had already granted independence recognition
to the Aboriginal race
of South Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But then at 1901,
when the
Constitution came in,
they lost everything. The Aboriginal.
Sorry, you're invisible.
Yes,
you're no one again.
That's right.
Just like the ground. Because they terra nullius.
They could vote and they could have land rights up until Commonwealth.
Golly gosh.
Mm, mm. So this
so
is,
It's been a long time coming. 1834, 1963.
Well, 1901, when the Commonwealth was formed, that the Aboriginals were then disenfranchised in South Australia to start with, but then disenfranchised all around the country.
Golly gosh.
You can't.
I think our politicians have got poker faces.
Well, I think they could do something, couldn't they?
Let's have Lady Gaga. She's talking about having a poker face. Well, I think we know our politicians are like that. Come on, Malcolm. Get your
do something.
Organized. Give recognition. You're on Joy. 94.9. Been there, done that. Phil, Chris and Gordon.
I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me.
I love it.
Love game, intuition, play the cards with spades to start. And after he's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on his heart.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9.
You're with Phil, Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Thanks very much for being with us. We've got a pretty meaty old program today. Coming up, we'll be talking about the Snowy Mountain Scheme. And then we'll be talking about a fellow by the name of Herb Ritz, who was a famous photographer in the US. But he's a gay man. But he wasn't photographing men.
No.
He was creating icons of his own.
Right.
And in the process, he's become an icon. On the 1st of August, 1949, so around about this time, a long time ago, the Snowy Mountains Hydro Scheme was instituted.
Snowy Mountains Hydroelectric Scheme was built to create power, but it also was to help the farmers have water for their farms as well. It was first proposed way back in 1918 because the farmers wanted water. But then 1949, the Labor government decided that they would, Ben Chifley decided that they would build the Snowy Mountains Hydroelectric Scheme.
The snowy area, the Snowy Mountains in southern New South Wales is not a particularly hospitable part of the countryside. It's the area where there's lots of valleys and high mountain peaks, and it's rugged stonework and terrible seasons there, snow in winter and high heat in summer. Well, they had to build some dams.
Yeah, that's right.
And block the water from the snow melt, stop that from going downstream.
While they were building up the...
And then they had to have tunnels, usually big pipes, taking the water down the hill, getting up a terrific speed as it went down, that would turn the turbines at the bottom of the hill, and this would be then turned into power, which would feed into the electricity grid. And the water after that would then be sent mainly inland for irrigation purposes, as you were saying.
I think it went into the Murrumbidgee River, didn't it? I think it was there.
But
the worst part about it was that they, by damming the Snowy River, when it flowed down to its mouth in Victoria, was basically had no water in it.
And it became a dry creek bed.
There was a little bit of water came down there, and it wasn't until many, many years later when one of the local politicians down there was elected on getting more water into the Snowy River, and the government said, right, they would release so many billion litres of water every year into the Snowy to keep it flowing.
Yeah, and the irrigators complained about that. They said, that's valuable water, and where's it ending up? In the sea.
No, but there was...
Doing the job of a river.
Yes, that's right. But there's also farmland in Victoria that was relying on the Snowy Mountains water.
So what was the payoff? The farmers got their water.
We got
and the public got the electricity, so we wouldn't fuss about losing the water.
Hmm.
But the greatest benefit to Australia was the workforce.
The immigration.
Because the immigration was of Central Europeans who had experience in snow country, in making hydro dams, of all this sort of heavy engineering.
And they wanted to get out of Europe after the war too, which was another thing, you know.
So this is why we've got people from the Baltic states, from the Central European states, from Switzerland area.
Well, it was the start of multiculturalism, really, wasn't it?
It was.
It was 100,000 men and women from 30 different countries.
Wow. That really mixed up the genes.
And boy, didn't Australia's economics go gangbusters when that started. This is what they say, that if you have immigration, your economy is going to improve mightily. But unfortunately, at the moment, we won't allow the amount of people coming into the country. But then you've also got to remember that Australia is a very dry country with very little water, and you have to have a maximum number of population for the water that we have. Other than that, you have to build desal plants.
The trouble with hydro schemes, because it's very clean energy, that's true, but to get that clean energy, you have to kill an environment. You have to drown all the wildlife, just changing it forever.
Yeah, well, they would have been smart enough to sort of, as the water was rising, they would have been getting out of the way.
Well, maybe the drop bears, fell to the ground and wriggled away. But but the trouble is, with electricity, the more you generate, the more we'll use.
Oh, God, yes.
The Hoover Dam in Colorado was best known for powering Las Vegas. Yeah. They had excess power, which they shipped to Los Angeles. Now it doesn't even power Las Vegas.
Politicians, if I can come back to the snowy scheme, please. Our dear Malcolm, our beloved leader, has suggested that Snowy 2.0 is on the books. Opportunity to create jobs and create wealth.
What they want to do, though, is just to turn the water around and reuse it.
In other words, pump it up the hill. So the energy of it coming down
has to be used to pump it back up again.
But there's always going to be losses, so eventually there'll be no water and no power because it can't go around more than four times.
Can't have perpetual motion.
Exactly.
Can I have perhaps a suggestion?
For me or for Malcolm?
For everybody. Don't hold your breath waiting for it to be built.
I think Snowy 2.0 is already fading from memory.
It was a big thing to make up a bit of a headline, and now it's... Yeah.
A political diversion.
A thought bubble.
Yes.
Are we using the same turbines and generators that were put there in the 1960s? Or have we upgraded to new technology?
I wouldn't know.
I don't know the answer.
I wouldn't know. And it's probably the last great piece of infrastructure that's ever been built in Australia.
In lots of ways, it's more of a disaster than it has been a benefit. Perhaps we are only able to focus now on the bad aspects of the whole project because of the way the water is being misused or just wasted.
But at the human level, we have pasta and pizzas.
We do,
From those immigrants.
Yes, that's right. And schnitzels.
Yep. Oh, yes. Thank you very much. Well, as George Michael would have said, too funky. But you're with Chris Gooden and Phil. Been there, done that. Stay tuned. There's more.
A diverse sound for a diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris Gooden and Phil. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. We're coming towards the end of our show, but we need to talk about Herb Ritts. In our little glance at history of gay history in the world.
Philip didn't know who Herb Ritts was.
Well,
I know the song.
What's that?
Putting on the Ritz.
Putting on the Ritz. Oh, yes.
Wrong one.
He doesn't even spell his name right. It's R-I-T-T-S.
Yes, that's right. He became a very well-known photographer of fashion. And when you read the list of people that he photographed for different publications and everything, it is mind-boggling the number of famous people that he actually met.
Naomi Campbell, Stephanie Seymour, Christy Turlington,
yes.
Cindy Crawford.
Yes. But he also photographed Marky Mark for the Calvin Klein ads. Those were the ones that you would see on the boards, on the hoardings here in Melbourne.
That underpants one.
Yeah, Marky Mark with his underpants. He was very, very popular at the St Kilda Junction.
I was going to say, I think I remember seeing
Yes, you would have. Well, that was a Herb Ritts, yes.
So he is a gay man, born on the 13th of August 1952, and he died in December 2002 at the age of 50. So he didn't have a particularly long life.
He was an HIV positive man, and he died of pneumonia, but it wasn't the pneumocystis pneumonia that is just an ordinary disease. It was another pneumonia that actually killed him.
Because in those days, the treatments really knocked your immune system around a hell of a lot. Well, and any little bug that got into you is likely to do extreme damage, and that's what happened there for Herb.
But he was remembered for his superb fashion photography. He was just absolutely stunning.
But I've got a list here of some of his commercial work.
Yeah.
And he's got names like Paul Mitchell, Cartier, and then in 1995, Haagen-Dazs. The ice cream company,
yes.
Which would be very important to have a good picture of ice cream.
Ooh. We've probably bought products as a result of Britz's
photography.
That's right. Yep. I mean, yep. Lacoste, Levi's, Gap, Maybelline. No, I haven't bought
I haven't bought Maybelline lately,
stuff,
no.
Well, you just don't tell us.
Chanel, Ralph Lauren, Giorgio Armani, Revlon. Yeah, so he's actually featured more for the women of the world.
Oh, yeah, but he did photograph men as well.
Isn't
yeah.
that good yeah. that a gay man has the eye for whatever would actually attract?
Once he got to be a bit well known, advertisers would go to him and say, we want to do a promotion. Know
so
what was
all
going
the
on.
Big fashion magazines, Harper's Bazaar, Vogue, Vanity Fair, yep. they would have featured the photos. Yeah, well, he did the photography for Olivia Newton-John in her physical album.
Yeah, yeah. He did videos as well. Wasn't only a still photographer.
But he'll be best known for his Calvin Kleins.
Oh, I think so, among the gay community. Memory.
Isn't it appropriate that you should, if you've got a strong brand and you don't muck around with it too much, it gathers strength.
Well, of course it has to.
Well, that's what's happened with the Joy logo. It's only been slightly tweaked over the years, and it's now good for us for another 10 years as it is. It's just been refreshed, and that's what happens to things like airlines. They change very slightly.
Yeah, but doesn't
what yeah. because they're advertising their product and they're naming their product because there's lots of similar products up in the air. But when you see, you know, a plane with the kangaroo star, yeah. you can say that's a Qantas plane. You don't need to see the words.
But Qantas, of course, Australian owned and
it's a famous export. Yeah,
Queensland and Northern Territory Air Service.
No, you're wrong.
What was it?
It's Queens and Nymphomaniacs trained as stewards.
Oh. Excuse me.
But you knew that, sure.
I didn't know. The first I've ever heard of that. truly, it's the first I've ever heard that.
Back on the 8th of August 1926, which is not all that long ago.
It's only
91 years. Yeah. The first aircraft produced by Qantas came out of the shed where it was screwed together.
They had to assemble it from overseas manufacturers' parts. Yeah. Whereas today, can you imagine how you order a plane? You call your financier and say, I need $400 million.
Yes.
Well, it was a de Havilland plane.
Oh, from
that's
England.
That's why the DH-50A. Yeah. And it was brought to Australia in a
ship
box. And on the side of it, Queensland and Northern Territory Aerial Services. The contraction into Qantas didn't happen until quite some time later.
No.
Qantas has been around for quite some time. Did you see on TV over the weekend, there was on one of the channels, a film story about Marilyn Monroe?
Yes.
She died on the 5th of August 1962. Mm. Now, she was one of the original blonde bombshells
she
of
was
the
a
movie
very
industry.
Beautiful woman. A beautiful woman, but a very troubled woman in her mind, you know.
I wonder if she was actually screwed around by the drugs that seemed to be going around the film industry to wake them up, to put them to sleep.
Mm.
Do you remember Elton John had a song called Norma Jean?
Norma Jean, that's her. That was her real
goodbye
name.
Goodbye, Norma Jean.
Goodbye,
it
Norma
was
Jean.
Goodbye, Norma Jean, indeed.
That was her actual name.
And then that particular song by Elton John was recycled around about this time, 20 years ago, for Diana.
For Diana, yeah.
Goodbye, English Rose.
Marilyn Monroe, as well as sort of being in the public eye, she also hobnobbed with John Kennedy, President of the US, around about that time.
Well, her Happy Birthday, Mr. President rendition is something to see if you ever get hold of it, because she doesn't wear underwear in that dress.
NVP, no visible panty line.
But she wouldn't wear underwear because she said it would destroy the line of the body through the fabric.
Golly gosh, she hobnobbed with the rich and famous, but she also linked to American President John F. Kennedy. Mm. And I don't think he denied it.
The press were different then. They knew a lot that they didn't say.
And they learned today not to say it.
These days they just print anything about anybody.
Well, we've said as much as we can get away with today, fellas.
All right. Okay, so we can go, can we?
Thanks very much for your input. And it's lovely. I hope the listener enjoys what we come up with each week. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you next week.
Bye now.
More of the same.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.